President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 4th on the West Coast, now March the 5th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network as well. And for those of you who were expecting us to start right on the hour, we got a little backlogged, so we had to wait our turn. Anyway, we're here, and if you're trying to listen in on the phone bridge, you can't even hear what I'm saying at the moment because the phone bridge is not up. So we'll be momentarily. Anyway, we've got a great show planned for you this evening. We have been talking about a number of issues regarding energy and power production and different ways of getting work done with technologies, and we're going to continue that discussion in a little bit. I just thought, this being Friday night, I would kind of play something different and just hope that you can jump outside the box during this show. Anyway, this is Rob Mullins. And this is Tarantula. Hello, we have some music in the background there.
When you stay walking down the street, do you recognize the people that you meet? Do you say hello and wave goodbye?
Hello, I'm Mr. Newsome.
The postman's making the run. The bob.
Oh, thank you. We were getting, that wasn't me playing that music, folks. So we thank Don Newsome. He had to get some Hawaiian music in there. Anyway, Rob Mullins and Tarantula.
Thank you.
tarantula. Boy, if that doesn't remind you of a tarantula, I don't know what would. Rob Mullins, we thank him for that song. We're going to go ahead and bring on tonight's guest. He is my regular co-host every Friday night on Evident Footprints. He is a scientist, inventor, and after that song, I feel like I should introduce him as a mad scientist and a mad inventor. Just kidding, Jim. He's also an author, lecturer, and teacher. His name is Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
I have to invite you up to the lab sometime.
Oh, well, you know, now that I've invited you, I guess we should allow the audience to respond. You're quite a popular guy there, Jim.
I'll anyway. Just give you the address. You can send your donations.
So how are you this evening?
Not too bad, all things considered. It's been a long week, though, Don, I'll tell you.
I know.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a long week, as you say, and I've been practicing my juggling. Let's put it that way, bouncing from research to communications to music to archives to website postings, all that stuff, you know, keeping busy. And then trying to understand what's going on in the world at the same time, you know. So.
Yeah, well, that's a tall order nowadays.
I don't think anybody can really figure out what's happening. I don't even think those that are doing what they're doing actually know what they're doing, if you get my meaning.
Well, I get your meaning. And, you know, I'll tell you, for a while I was really anxious about all that. And then I realized, you know, it's one of those situations where you really don't have a whole lot to say about it, and I'm here for a purpose. And so
yes.
I just ignore the whole thing and just focus on what I'm supposed to be doing. Because I know the universe will work it out.
Yes. I did a few shows this week dealing with the aspect of consciousness, but in a way where it's applied by people, where they consider that as human beings, we have been taught these concepts that separate us constantly from our natural connection with the universe. We're being programmed, propagandized, indoctrinated, and preached into a reality that is really all based on illusion and lies, the misconstruing of natural law, of universal law, we'll say, and all in the attempt at forcing us to dishonor the principles of the creation. And I was able to also play a clip from J. Krishnamurti, where he talked about us sorting out the things that we think are problems and getting rid of them, because all they are confirmations that we're still living in the past, that we're working in the past. He doesn't mean so much in terms of, let's say, someone who studies history, but in that what we do from day to day, and we think we're being creative, what we're doing is just basically recycling or regurgitating what's been done before. And so we never arrive at any meaningful solutions to our problems. We just keep compounding them. And you and I sort of touched upon that whole issue when we talked about the scientific community and how they look at certain things, particularly some of your inventions. When they can't explain what's going on, when it's beyond their knowledge, they have to put it down. Or they have to make statements like, well, that's just impossible. And it's supposed to be a dead issue at that point. And of course, I know that, and you've explained this to our listeners, that this is the norm out there. And I know you had a little bit more to say about that this week before we go on. But it's still going on. I mean, it's in the news, that very topic.
Well, I think it'll probably always go on because there's just something flawed in the way we human beings think, at least for the most part. But that being as it may, I wanted to share something really interesting with you guys because I've been reading a lot of books, especially about consciousness. Just because I do unusual work doesn't mean that my consciousness is where I want it to be. And there's a lot of interesting books on this topic anymore. I mean, lately there have been quite a few new books published. There's one book in particular. This time I won't mention the title, not because I don't want to share it, but because I'm not 100% sure that the guy would want his story transmitted all over the world. But I'll look into it, and if I'm incorrect about that, we'll visit with this topic again in the future. But anyway, he was a guy who wanted to be involved with health care in a very, very passionate way, but he was so turned off by the medical community's closed-mindedness and the overbearing influence on doctors by the drug companies and the negative, almost Nazi-like tyranny exhibited by the AMA. He just couldn't see himself becoming a doctor. And so he prayed to God to give him some insight into what he could do along those lines. And he had an amazing experience one day in which he just had a burst of consciousness and an influx of some type of cosmic force into his body, and he became a healer. And he wasn't one previously. I mean, he never even thought of it that way, but that's what happened to him. And the thing that's interesting about this is that he has healing by the laying on of hands, which, of course, is one of the oldest methods that's reported throughout history, including in the Bible and other ancient texts. And but he doesn't just do it, you know, like touching you or whatever. He literally molds you back to the way he feels you should be. So like if there's something physically wrong, that seems to be his expertise, is dealing with people that have physical deformities, broken limbs, inadequacies from childhood or from birth. And, you know, he literally somehow can see what the person should have been like and just fixes it. And he literally molds the flesh with his hands and it changes. And they have a series of pictures in this book that are just unbelievable. Has to do with a poor person who was strangulated by some kind of fibrous material that was in his mother's womb along with him as a developing fetus. And it so distorted his cranium and his face and his hands that he was literally considered a monster by anybody that looked at him. And finally, through a series of serendipitous experiences, he was led to this gentleman. And not only did he remold his entire face and his his cranium structure and his hand, but he did such an amazing job that the guy looks, you know, so normal now that you wouldn't even give him a second look. He just looks like any other person. The interesting thing is that they filmed this entire transition, and there's quite a few pictures of this particular case, as well as others that are in the book I'm telling you about. The reason I'm bringing this up is because there is no limit to what the human being can do. And it's that exact knowledge that the so-called elite of this world do not want you to have. Just imagine if everybody that's presently under the dominion of some of these characters was to be given the type of insight and the gift in their own field, not necessarily in healing, but in whatever it is you do, to excel to the point where you could manifest amazing changes that would have a positive bearing on the condition of this world. Why those people would just have to retreat into their caves and back under their rocks, because there'd be no stopping it. And that's how it should be. That's the way it was intended. And this guy even mentions that in his book. He says that each of us were brought here for a specific purpose, and it is your responsibility to discover what that purpose is, to plug yourself in to the higher consciousness, to the God source, and work in union with that force to achieve what you were sent here for. And if you do anything less than that, essentially you fail, and you're going to be back. Of course, that enters into a whole other realm of interesting discussion regarding reincarnation. But you really ought to think about that, folks, because it's absolutely true. And when you find what it is you're supposed to do, you won't be able to give it up, even if you want to, because the drive is unbelievable. You surrender yourself to this other force, and you do what you're supposed to be doing. And the interesting thing is, I can tell you, you don't always know how it's going to turn out. You don't know if you're going to succeed or not. But if you have the right faith that not only are you here to execute a particular program of activity, but whenever you run into hardships, whenever you're impeded by the rest of the world, you just put yourself in the hands of the higher force, and somehow it'll get done. And that's what we all should be doing. So, Don, excuse me for taking that little excursion, but I was really moved by reading this book, and I thought that I would share that with the listening audience. And I have every intention of writing to this gentleman, and if it turns out that he answers me in a positive way, I'm going to plug his book on your show with your permission, because it's something everyone should read.
Well, let's try to get him on the show. Why don't we do that?
That'd be super, too. That yes. would be super.
Does he reveal if he discerns what the cause of maybe the particular illness or deformity is, or does he just focus on the solution? In other words,
he doesn't go into that in detail, but what's implied is that it doesn't matter. Earlier in the book, he talked about people with broken bones that hadn't healed properly, and they've been that way for years. And the minute that he touches them or combines his consciousness with theirs, which is apparently part of what's involved here, he just knows how it should be. And he manipulates the life energy with his hands, and he literally has the ability to reform them. Bones and all. And the interesting thing is, now this isn't just a question of some sci-fi story. This has now been documented by hundreds of people, and a lot of them are medical doctors, and they're totally astonished. But what they're all saying is, wow, if everybody could learn to do this, or at least the physicians could learn to do this, this would become a really, really different world.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have started a foundation, and they are literally dedicating themselves, this gentleman and his associates, to seeing if this talent can be taught or bestowed upon others, or if others can raise their consciousness and their desires to the point that he did, so that something similar will be bequeathed to them. And while they don't advertise a whole lot, apparently they are very, very sincere, and they're having a lot of interesting results.
Now, that reminds me of another story, if I can share a story, a short story with you and the listeners. This is more about somebody who had established a relationship on that level, that empathetic level with an elephant. There was a man named Joe Miller back in 1972 who graduated from Waco Junior College and then went on a safari in Kenya. On a hike through the bush, he came across a young bull elephant standing with one leg raised in the air. The elephant seemed distressed, so Joe approached it very slowly and very carefully. He got down on one knee, inspected the elephant's foot, and found a large piece of wood deeply embedded in the foot. As carefully and gently as he could, he worked the wood out with his knife, after which the elephant gingerly put his foot back down on the ground. The elephant turned to Joe and, with a rather curious look on its face, stared at him for several tense moments. And Joe stood frozen, thinking of nothing else but being trampled. Eventually, the elephant trumpeted loudly, turned, and walked away. And Joe never forgot that elephant nor the events of that day. Now, some 30 years later, Joe was walking through the Waxahachie Zoo with his family. As they approached the elephant exhibit, one of the animals turned and walked over to near where Joe and his family were standing. And this large bull elephant stared right at him, lifted its front foot off the ground, and then put it down. The elephant did that several times, then trumpeted loudly, all the while staring at Joe. Remembering what happened back in 1972, Joe couldn't help wondering if this was the same elephant. And he summoned up his courage. He climbed over the railing and he made his way into the enclosure. He walked right up to the elephant and stared back at him. The elephant trumpeted again, wrapped his trunk around one of Joe's legs, and slammed him against the railing, killing him instantly. Probably wasn't the same elephant.
I thought you were building up to something really, really beautiful, and you had to turn it into that?
Yes.
I must say, I didn't expect that particular ending. But to put things back on a better track, there was a story that my sister sent me not too long ago about a whale. They got ensnarled in a bunch of fishing nets, and it was essentially drowning because it couldn't get himself up to take breaths. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of divers went out because the tourists reported the fact that this poor animal was in trouble, and they literally used their their diving knives, the big 8-inch blades, to cut this net completely free. And when that happened, this whale, and I believe it was a sperm whale, into an absolute tizzy of joy and was leaping out of the water and dashing about, you know, just exhibiting its pleasure at being free. And after it calmed down, it came back and it thanked each one of those divers. It literally came back, came right up to them, and looked at them, and, you know, their eye is the size of a basketball. So, you know, but there was just a feeling emanating from him, from that animal, of gratitude and thanks and camaraderie. And then it just swam away. And one of the divers was the person who wrote the article, and he said that there was absolute... There was no misgiving about the message. The intention was that he was being thanked, and they all felt the same way. There were five or six of them, and you know, there goes another perfect example of the power of intent, and it isn't just human beings that have it, you know. I'm sure that type of energy, or whatever you want to call it, emotional, directed emotional power, is something which all of creation shares in common.
Oh,
and it just goes to show that there's really much more to life than what we perceive on a daily basis. And that's the whole point here. You know, all these things that you hear about which make the headlines, which are really unusual, even your story of the elephant would have been totally beautiful had it not been for
the ending
you gave it. But, I mean, things like that actually happen. I mean, elephants do have that kind of a memory.
Of course, and I have a lot of warm and fuzzy animal stories that I could tell, but that was one that was just leading you in a particular direction. But that also proves the point of what's going on here, too. You see, we arrive at conclusions without having all the information, and we're relying on those who are giving us the information that we are assimilating to be telling us the truth, you see, and we shouldn't take that for granted at all. That's
well,
the point.
I certainly don't.
So that's why I got away with telling a story like that.
Well, and, actually, I didn't interrupt because I was anticipating a really special ending, but one that was a little bit more positive.
Well, it was a special ending.
I know.
Yeah, you know, but it wasn't the one you anticipated. That's all.
And true.
You know, it's of course there are probably some out there that delight in such endings. You know, based on the propensity to look at the dark side of things, we're moving through that. But that's an outside the box ending. Let's put it that way. So, yes, I agree with what you're saying, Jim. Can't disagree with it at all. I can tell you similar stories either about my own pets or friends that I know that have animals that have a certain kind of a personality. And, you know, I hear these experts say things like, well, you know, animals don't have spirits. A cow doesn't have a spirit, or a dog or a cat. That's a bunch of nonsense, they say. And there are no bigger lies than those.
I agree. And don't forget, too, most of the people that spin such tales as those, they probably don't live with an animal of any sort. And if they do, they probably just keep it out in the yard and they don't share their life with it. Anybody mm-hmm. that actually has a dog or some kind of a pet that they really, really cherish and spend a lot of time with, I don't care what any book says. Those creatures can think, and they have feelings. And the problem with denying that is that you're also denying a huge portion of your own life. What I mean by that is, think of the enrichment and the additional experiences that you would have at your disposal if you embraced another creature and shared a relationship with it to the point where you started to understand his form of existence and vice versa. I mean, I've lived 15, 18 years with one dog, and I can tell you that critter, not only did he know me, but he knew, you know, my moods. He knew what I was doing. I could explain things to that animal, and he would do the things that I asked him to do. It wasn't even a question of, you know, programming him or training him. It was just a question of communicating to the point where he got the idea of what I wanted, and then he would do those things to please me. We played games together. I played tricks on him. I used to literally play practical jokes on him, and the way he reacted was unbelievable. And, you know, in a lot of ways, when you reach that level of closeness with an animal, in some ways it's better than a relationship with a human, because there's no preconditioning involved. There's no bias. There's only unconditional love, and it's an amazing experience.
Yes. Yes, I know someone who lost a pet recently, and he was pretty choked up about it. It was an animal that he'd only had for 6 years, and he was driving home, and the animal was sitting on the passenger seat, and he was making a couple hundred mile drive, and they were about maybe 50 miles from home. And suddenly his dog just sat real straight up, looked at him, licked him on the face, and then sat back in the seat and died right there on the spot. And it was really a sad moment for him. I mean, he went into shock, and he asked me what I thought the meaning of it. In other words, why did this happen to my dog at this early age? Why did this happen to me? And I said, well, what do you think? I said, did your dog not show you unconditional love? And he said, oh, absolutely. She, when I come home from work, she was my shadow. And I said, and she made friends with all of your acquaintances and your family members. Everyone liked her, right? And he said, yeah. And I said, when you're not around her, before you had her, and even now, in the short time that she's gone, how are you feeling about your life? And he says, well, before I got her, my life was very chaotic. And since she's passed away, I'm becoming again more chaotic in everything, in all my relationships and with my work, and, you know, I'm very unsettled about it. And I said, simply, your dog came here to teach you unconditional love. And you're in a state of hating everyone right now, and that's not the real you. You have a lot of anger. You feel a lot of betrayal inside, and your dog never, ever treated you that way, did she? And he said, no, you're right. And from the moment that he got that concept, that idea of what I was telling him, he changed his whole attitude about the dog's passing and built a shrine for her, lit candles for her, because he feels her presence even now. And I said, yeah, she's going to always be with you. You're always going to feel her presence. And she's that reminder. That was her purpose for coming here, was to teach you unconditional love. And at the point where she felt that you had it learned, it was time for her to move on to her next assignment. Well, you know, that shook him up to the depths of his soul, but he's come to understand that, and he's turned that now into positive action, positive thoughts, and he's healing his relationships as a result. So you can never, ever underestimate the impact that an animal has on a human being's life. Never.
I agree. And what's interesting, too, about the thing that you just said is that it would tend to support the concept that every being that shares existence with us has purpose. And we should not neglect the fact that that includes us. And just imagine if somebody was actually sent here to be a Michelangelo or a Da Vinci or a Mozart or a Louis Pasteur or something like that. And because of the fact that his life is dominated by a bunch of stupid rules and his finances are controlled by those people who organize and run the world, that he is actually channeled into situations where he is denied that form of expression. I would dare to say that there are tens of thousands, possibly millions, of people that fall into that category. Then they go through life feeling totally unfulfilled. And, you know, probably when they're on their deathbed, you know, they're thinking about all the things they wish they had done. I don't think any of us want to be in that position.
Well,
at least I
think,
hope not.
Yeah, I think that we
should proceed, you know, with the best energy that we have to discover our purpose and to pursue it at all costs.
Yes,
never mind all this programming
that's
forced upon us.
Jim, I discussed that with Z.S. Livingstone on the show, and I asked some very elementary questions about the suppression of knowledge, whether it's scientific or historical or archaeological or religious in nature. It really doesn't matter. What is wrong with having people learn? What is wrong with having people be free? And I don't mean in a political sense, I mean in a universal sense. As sovereign beings that have a right to exist, what is wrong with them existing in a state where they're not interfered with, but encouraged, and where applicable, taught? You want to create a functioning society? Start by doing things that are functional. Not dysfunctional. You know, the goal, we understand clearly we understand what the agenda is, but that's their agenda. Okay? We have to create something new, and we have the right to create something new, to be who we came here to be, not who they tell us we have to be. Because if that's their right, then it's our right to tell them back to take a hike.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. As a matter of fact, what you just said propels me back to the first chapter of that book I was referencing earlier. So this guy went in to see a guidance counselor and told him what it was he was hoping to do with his life. And the guy looked at his acute preference test and the rest of his grades and his other paperwork there, and he said, well, you'll never amount to anything. He said, if I were you, I'd forget about all this doctoring and curing of people and just concentrate on, you know, becoming something worthwhile. Go trim lawns. Go put up wallpaper. And the guy was so crushed by that it literally impeded his progress for at least 15, 20 years. And he says that right in the book. And that's only one negative influence. Just imagine what happens to people that are smashed by thousands of such negative suggestions you know, all throughout their childhood, throughout their adolescent years, their teenage years, and even their adult years until they're just plain whipped.
Yes. Yes, that's happened to many, many people throughout history, likely millions. Buddha doesn't have to. I mean, what is this thing about not knowing the truth? Or trying to keep the truth secret from beings who are entitled to know it and have the capacity to know it. You know, I mean, it's insane.
Yes, it is. It's insane. And the only answer I can possibly come up with that is sane is the fact that they do it because if they have the knowledge and you don't, it represents a form of power, and they are gluttons for power of all kinds. And keeping you ignorant is one of them.
I know, but I think that's changing. I really do. It is changing. Is it happening as fast as we would like? Well, I guess, what is fast? You know? If you're taking in the whole picture, maybe there are enough people awake already. Maybe it's now that they're awake, they've got to get up and do something. You know, take those steps. That's sort of what we've been focusing on this week anyway. You know, we get bombarded with information as to what NASA has postulated on the basis of some calculations that they made with a computer. Oh, they just came out now saying that there were probably 500 million planets in our galaxy. I've flat out stated there were at least a trillion several years ago. At least a trillion planets in our galaxy alone. But they have a computer that computes a fraction of that. What's the purpose for the information if it's not true? You see? It's more propaganda, more brainwashing. It's another dog and pony show to distract everyone. And we're at that point in the show, Jim, where I feel like making a short transition, a musical transition, might give our listening audience a chance to catch their breath. and I'm going to play something here. It's called No Secrets. Thank you. You know, Jim, while that was playing, I was thinking of all the people who have suffered at the hands of the pharmaceutical companies under this pretense that they're managing health. And one reason which this is another prong of the attack that's on humanity, and that's on the body, on the health, on the mind. If you want to say the body is the temple for the spirit, well, at least some of its essence, then certainly that attack is ultimately against the spirit. And you have to ask yourself, how can these people live with themselves? Well, the answer is they're not people. It comes back to that angle again. Nowhere in nature do the species attack each other like humans are attacked, provoked to attack each other, or attacked by other types of beings from other realms. And so our answers are in knowing the truth. No secrets about it. What could be wrong? Well, I think we are at a time, not just in history, but in eternity. We are in a time frame here in this three-dimensional world where this issue has to be resolved once and for all. And I'm not just speaking about consciousness, but I'm speaking about everything that's done to humanity to cause it to fail, to cause it to become extinct. Any thoughts you'd like to make on that? We still have some time, so feel free to comment.
Well, I'd like to just go back a little ways on to the subject we were discussing before the song, the musical piece that you played. This idea of having the personal freedom to explore your true purpose in life, I think that's a paramount importance, because it's the real reason why we're here. We're not here to serve some morphodite that's too lazy to do anything worthwhile. We're here for the betterment of our own souls and to fulfill some purpose for the greater good. And along those lines, I would just like to point out two or three interesting things that some pretty great people have said over the years. Now, I don't know about all of our listeners, but I'm sure most people have heard of Henry Ford. And when he perfected the Model T and then later on the Model A, and he had his assembly line going in a big plant there over there in Dearborn, Michigan, cranking out cars by the thousands, and somebody approached him in a congratulatory manner and said, "You know, this is really a miracle that you could have achieved all this." And he smiled, put his hand on the fellow's shoulder and said, "No, not at all." He said, "Actually, it was so simple." He said, "I know I've done all this before." Now, that's a pretty amazing statement, but I'm telling you, I know what it implies, too. But actually, that's not necessarily the point of focus. I'll get to it in a second. The other thing that's worthwhile was when George Patton was leading the, what was it, the Third Army or the Fourth Army, I forget, across Europe on his way to Germany, they entered a field, or they came toward a field that was off to one side of the road, and he actually stopped the entire procession of his men. He got out of the car, climbed up on a stone wall, and just stared at the entire vista. And finally, somebody was a little bit concerned about what he was doing, came over to him and said, "General, what is it that you're doing?" And he said, "Oh, I'm just remembering." And then he proceeded to describe an entire conflict that had taken place in that area between the Romans and the Gauls regarding, you know, the takeover of that land and who was involved and what the logistics were and what tactics were used and how many were killed and all this kind of stuff. And, of course, the other guy was blown away by that. The other thing that's worthwhile to think about is when we regard the geniuses that have come to this world, like Mozart, for instance, Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, some of these people started doing what they were doing at unbelievably young ages. You know, look at what Mozart was doing with music. It's almost unbelievable. Leonardo da Vinci covered so much territory that if you're interested, it would literally take you years to follow in his footsteps. I don't mean by doing what he did. I mean just by reading about it. And the thing about Michelangelo, which is so interesting, is the fact that he was a pretty renowned sculptor. And one of the things that he used to talk about was he would find a piece of marble. And just by looking at that marble, he would say, "Oh, I saw the angel in the marble, and I removed what wasn't necessary just to set it free." He had that gift where he could just somehow look at what he was doing and knew what it needed to be. You know, these are people, whether they were reincarnated or not, doesn't make any difference. They were so in touch with what they were here for. That's the message. That's the point. Think of the kind of lives that they led. Now, there might be people out there listening who don't think very much of what they've amounted to in life. Maybe they wish they were doing something else, you know, or maybe they're just in a rut or they're dissatisfied for other reasons, and they can't imagine comparing themselves to any of these people. But I disagree. It's just that you're downtrodden. There are so many things that need to be done on this world. Who's to say what your particular talent could amount to if you really got into it and discovered why you were sent here and put all your energies into doing what you're supposed to be doing? And the interesting thing is, even if it's a really tough assignment that seems like it's impossible, the joy that you will get by just doing what you're supposed to be doing is actually beyond belief. You can't even describe it because you're on board and you can sense that you're working with a higher consciousness and it feels right. And that's what you've got to learn how to do, is to listen to your heart, listen to your feelings. You have to do what you feel is right. Now, some of you may already be doing that, and certainly I'm not addressing those people, but I do know that there are so many people that just are unfulfilled in life, and they've been funneled into a situation that they can't get out of. But if you raise your consciousness to the point where you ask the divinity for guidance and say, "Look, I really would rather be doing something else," a miracle will happen. Something will happen to get you out of that mold and into a completely different venue of existence. Trust me, it really happens. Don't you think so, Don?
Yes, absolutely. That's the essence of the message that we've been bringing out all week, is that you want a different situation. Don't try to manufacture it using the spare parts from the situations that failed. And I'm not speaking about those that are your personal situations, or maybe they're related in some way. How is it that all the world's problems, whether it's disease or the issue of God or the way people treat each other or the wars or the drug problems or the oil shortages, it doesn't matter what problem you're talking about. What is it so unique about the banks that they're the ones that handled the problem? That's where the corruption is. How can anyone keep turning to the banks to provide the solution? They've stolen all the money. Should they be honored further as having some special kind of wisdom? Some sacred wisdom? They're demonic. They're destructive. They're everything that none of us would choose to be. Unless we were insane. And they've sold that system to everybody or rammed it down their throats. Well, you have to do this and get it now while you can, because it's going to run out. Doesn't matter if it breaks after you get it. When it runs out, they don't have to replace it. That's how they do everything. When they steal your money, they don't replace it. It remains stolen. How is it that the banks become the solution? The stock market, anything to do with the financial community. Well, we know the answers to that. I just think it's, if you look at it for a moment in that perspective, it really seems stupid, doesn't it? Aren't the doctors the ones that are supposed to be curing diseases? Didn't they take an Hippocratic oath? To give their patients, bring about healing, to give them comfort and the best quality of life from a health perspective. Everything being done to us is to reverse that. And it's being condoned by those that have taken oaths to heal people. It's really a crazy system. And these are the people that are going to provide us with health care? Come on. How are the banks going to provide us with health care? By privatizing all these clinics they build, or the prisons they build where they turn the prisoners into guinea pigs for the medical and scientific community? It's insane what's going on. So we have to, you know, I don't mean to sound like I'm ranting, Jim. I'm just laying a foundation. We have to create something new, totally new. And we have to learn to communicate those concepts to each other. Forget about their games. That's all they are games. High stakes games, but games nonetheless. All based on illusion, sleight of hand. I can't really follow up what you said. You said it so eloquently, but I had to just ask these simple little questions, because I can't see these people telling us the truth. I can't see them guiding us in the proper direction when everything they do is intended to do the opposite. The only choice.
Yeah, well, actually, we're not being guided. We're being herded. That's the point.
Well, you understand what I mean. Yeah.
I wish we were being guided.
Yeah. Well, you can be guided by stepping outside of that reality.
Exactly.
We've talked about that numerous times. Well, did you want to make any other comments before we say goodnight?
Well, the only thing, you know, that I was interested in doing was demonstrating the connection between these states of mind or these levels of consciousness. Not only as they couple into our purpose in life, but also as on the broader sense, as they open up the ability for the universe to make contributions to things that we are trying to achieve. You know, people who have inspirations, who have visions, who have extraordinary experiences on a personal level, are all coupled into this higher mind or this higher consciousness. And I'm sure that if you were to interview them, they'd all say that it's a blissful feeling. Not only are they doing something worthwhile for everybody else, but their own life is enriched because they've surrendered to this other cause. And I think that that's really where most people would like to be. They just don't know how to get there.
Yeah, I'm asking these basic rhetorical questions for a purpose, so that people ask themselves that question. Yeah, why is it that the banks are involved in everything? Why is it? Well, that's the nature of the problems. You know, Christ talked about that. He called them vipers, serpents, vermin. And he was speaking about the money changers. It's still true today. Did anyone learn the lesson in 2,000 years?
Nothing has changed.
Only it's gone downhill. It's degraded. I don't know what the exact state of every individual was back in those days in biblical times, but you can presume that in its own way it was a model that you could move into a different time period and it would function the same way in that time period. Now we have to, I'm sure you agree with me that we have to create, we have to demand that we be creative. And that any attempt to stifle creativity itself is stopped and dealt with. You know, it's
I can't speak for anybody else because I'm not qualified. I mean, I don't know what their lives are like, but I can certainly tell you this. If the creativity was denied to me, my life would just essentially be worthless. I mean, I've paid, you know, very dearly to be in the position where, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. And I so identify with that function because it is my purpose.
Yes.
That if you denied it to me, it would be really, really a miserable existence. And just imagining that puts me in the position to think of people who, through no fault of their own, rather through circumstantial situations, have been driven into some of the most useless, boring posts in life, and only because they're willing to sacrifice for their family's sake do they continue to remain there. And all I'm saying is you don't even have to do that. If you open yourself up to suggestions from the universe, something will occur to you that you can do to change and get out of that situation. It's very doable. Think about it.
Yes. I agree with you. It is. Well, Jim, we're out of time. I appreciate your input on the show tonight. A lot of truth coming out. And I'll look forward to when I get this archive posted so others can come and hear what you have to say. And, you know, this is a positive ending or a happy ending. It can be a happy ending. It you don't have to accept a false reality as the real one. It's insane to do that. And no one's making any judgments here. if you're not happy with your life, if you want to contribute, you want to have meaning in your life, recognize what's going on about you as you go through your daily routines. Look at people's faces, look in their eyes, talk to people, and don't believe what we say. Do some research. You have to take responsibility. That's a word that keeps coming up too. We're responsible for what we allow to happen as much as we are for what we don't allow to happen.
Yeah, exactly. There cannot be true freedom without responsibility. And I think that that's one of the myths that's been rammed down our throats. You know, that a lot of people may have the incorrect notion that true freedom means do whatever you want to do. Don't pay any attention to anything else. And It really isn't. It isn't so. You know, freedom comes along with a set of guidelines, and our founding fathers knew that, and that's the reason why they put so much attention and so much structure into our founding documents. It isn't just because it was the thing to do at the time. It's always been the thing to do, and responsibility is the key. So just remember that when you strive for a better life.
Yes, very well said. Well, Jim, I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to wish you a great weekend, and I look forward to your next appearance on Evident Footprints.
Well, thank you, Don. I look forward to it also.
Okay, and you get some rest this weekend. I know what it is to need to recharge the batteries. You ought to know that.
I'll do my best.
All right. Have a good night. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's guest, scientist inventor Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show. Over at BBS Radio, we had Don Newsom on the sound tonight. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. Atru Ott. In the meantime, have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.